Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Bryce Castillo.
Hello, everybody.
Brian Brushwood.
And that's it.
That's it.
All done. The whole gang is here.
Only us.
Done and done. So we love it when you guys send us questions because we lack imagination and don't have anything really to say. And I'm gonna read a question which Bryce sent to me to read because of the way it's sort of phrased. It says, Bryce, Mr. Awesome, should be a period after Mr. I'm just saying.
Unless that's how his first name. First name, Murr.
Yeah, unlike Dr. Pepper, I don't have a period after the
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder if you and the not awesome guys could discuss top-level domains and if they really need a .com for their project. If people primarily arrive via search and social, does the domain name matter? On a related note, do they even need a website? Would a Facebook page do just as well? Arigato, Mr. Awesomeo. Lyle Sturm.
I think there is something about having a .com over pretty much anything else that, a disclosure, we have a history of
doing ads with domain.com.
Domain.com, yeah. and selling, like one of their selling points is .coms have a
Well, I don't think I'm talking out of school to say that you know, as with any sponsor, at different times they want you to focus on different aspects.
Sure.
And there was definitely an arc where they wanted us to talk about all the creative top level domains that you could do. We always we love riffing on .pizza,
.space, .us,
right? And then other times they wanted us to emphasize the credibility that comes from a .com or a .net. And in the hierarchy, it does seem like .com is king.
Right.
Man, if you're an oldster like me and Andrew, .com is the 1-800. .net is the 1-888.
Okay.
And then you know, everything else is 1-866 or 1-855, right. And so on.
Yeah, so like getting a creative top level domain is nice because it's a way to kind of show off a little bit of flair, I guess. You know, if you look at like Peach, it was peach.cool, right? Or I don't know. I think it is helpful, but I don't know.
I would say the only reason to not go for a .com is if the other top level domain completes the word or embodies something about it. Like .pizza is a fine domain. Like if you want to sell pizza in your local, Austin.pizza, that's all you got to know. Just get everybody saying Austin.pizza. In fact, I'd be curious who has it.
Yeah.
Also, it needs to be the name of your business, right? It can't be Domino's.pizza or whatever. Like that's dumb because then...
Yes, you should have Domino's.com. Domino's should have Domino's.com because they're so big. But right. I also can see, because like Taco Bell got TA.co.
All right. That's fine. That's great.
And so it's supplemental. But you don't go to, you go to Taco Bell.com.
It's good for shortener. Step number one is if you're avoiding the top level domain because somebody has a name similar to yours and they're in the same space as you, bad idea. That's problematic. If you're like, oh, I couldn't get this. I want to do a music discovery system, you know, but like newartist.com's taken and they do the same thing. I'm going to do newartist.music.
Yeah. Mine's Napster with two P's.
Yeah.
It's totally different.
I had that like a week or two ago. I've been watching a lot of Tasty videos on YouTube, the BuzzFeed brand Tasty. And I went to they have a website with all the recipes and stuff posted. And so I went to tasty.com thinking that was it. And that's a completely different company. But they don't tell you it's their tasty.co or whatever.
Right.
But there can be confusion if you don't promote the website correctly and you'd have a not.com.
I just went through this because I just bought audiomatic.com for the project I've been talking about. So I spent spent a nice chunk of change to buy Audiomatic, right? Mm-hmm. And I love the name Audiomatic, you know, because it's just cool, and Audiomatic.com. And, you know, when I went through like endless possible combinations, and one of the rules I say is like, you can be clever once in your name. You don't get to be clever twice, because then people can't remember. And so Audiomatic's kind of like Automatic, but it's Audiomatic. That's my cleverness. If I went for .net or anything else, it'd be weird. I had a friend once who wanted to launch an online magic business, called me up and says, ah, oh, you just got this name, you know, we'll call it like, science-magic.com. So I'm like, dude, can't do a dash.
Dashes are tough.
Yeah, I'm like, he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, one is that there's somebody who has that name that you already want, and they're doing something kind of like it. Two, you got a dash. Dash is not to say like, oh, it's end of the world, you can never do that. If you have a choice, don't do it. How many websites do you interact with that are well-known that used? And I'm sure we have a few ones that we do, but really dashes are hard, and it also means that somebody else has that other name, and that's where the confusion sets in. This question is, you know, you don't need it. Doesn't have to be .com. Like, there are great companies that use other ones, you know, like, you know, I was mentioned, like, you know, in AI, there's a lot of companies that use .ai, you know, Loeb.ai just got bought by Microsoft, and, you know, they do kind of a cool thing, and you can use another top level domain. The one thing you do not want to do is, he says, would a Facebook page do just as well?
So, okay, let's make as short a side journey as we can, because I think we're all in agreement that building your business on any other platform with no escape valve for when they change their terms of service, or in the case of a serial offender like Facebook that constantly encourages you to build a business on its platform, then changes the rules and tries to extract money from you. A serial extortionist, Facebook, them specifically, but in general, platform, you've got to be highly diversified.
Yeah. Because I see that a lot with like restaurants, right? Restaurants just need a place to put their open times and whatever, and they don't want to get a Squarespace or something, so they just do Facebook or what have you. And if like, you should have an online presence because people want to see your menu. Like I'm thinking in this very specific instance where I find something that I'm looking for doesn't have a website, or they have Facebook. And even then, Facebook is confusing and kind of a mess for that stuff.
Plus, also, if you have a website, then Google is getting increasingly good at scraping your website to put up important things like your high traffic hours, as reported by other Google people, or when people are searching for things. It sees what your hours are and puts that in the summary on there. And I think Google is still a dominant force over Facebook, and you will not get that advantage with Facebook.
By all means, have a Facebook page where there's info to get hold of you or whatever. By all means, have a page. That should not be the thing. Anytime, like, one of the things, there was I forgot who it was, but somebody was very critical of Zuckerberg and Facebook, and says a platform allows other people to come in money, and the total size of the platform is bigger than your worth, you know, like, you know, and that's why, you know, a platform where people can go in and, like, you can go in and you can create apps and put them on iPhone or Google Play, and the app developer gets most of the money, whatever, like this sort of thing. And if it's IP, you can move elsewhere, then it's a wonderful, cool thing. Facebook wants to make kind of all of the money in the platform. And that's why people will tentatively try to build things there, but you find out long term, like, the really great game companies are not primarily going, well, we'll build it first on Facebook, because they've learned that lesson that. And that's the problem. And, you know, Amazon's a platform where most of the money is made by other people outside of Amazon selling through Amazon, but Amazon gets a piece of all of it, so Amazon makes the most money. So platforms, you know, if you own a website, you own a URL, you pay your $12 a year, you get to maintain it, and you own it forever. You build your main thing somewhere else, bad.
So let me throw in a, I don't know, sort of a 1,000 feet up view on this kind of thing. One of the things that I think story matters. I think clarity of vision matters. I think narrative matters. I think that when a brand does well, it knows exactly what it is. And I think a lot of people have an idea for what it is they want to provide and what the voice should be and what the name should be. They do those things first, and then they go to try to find the domain. And upon finding out that it's already been squatted or it's a concrete company or it's whatever, they try to find a variation because they don't want to flex on the big idea that they invested so much effort to figure out for themselves. I have found tremendous benefit from having a general idea of what you want to satisfy, but being flexible on the grand vision. For example, you know, right now we're dealing with builders as we build out, you know, Diamond Club Studios and the Monorogue World headquarters and all this stuff. And what the builders would love is for me to submit a 5-year plan, master plan from the beginning or whatever. And so that they, you know, why go in stages? Just build one giant mega thing. Well, I don't have that kind of money. And so as I'm fond of repeating to them, the vision can flex to what is possible. That is easier for me to do. I can change the story easier than I can pay for whatever vision I have right now to be exactly executed. And so likewise, let's say you get to that point where the name that you really like happens to already be taken. You know, be flexible. Understand that Amazon is a terrible name for a bookstore. It's also a terrible name for the world's largest company. It's also a terrible name for a fulfillment company. It's a terrible name for a web services time slice offering, whatever. And yet it works fine because that happened to be the name that he could afford to buy. And it doesn't matter. People will project eventually whatever you define the thing is onto that word.
Now, I would add a couple of addendums there. But I would say, like, if you went back into 1990 and I said, hey, let me name you some of the biggest companies in the world in tech. Amazon, Google, Uber, Tesla. What are they make? What's that?
Fiverr.
They're big. Let's go big.
Well, sure. Bit.
Yeah, the big is like, what do they make? You would have no idea. Now, if I said Apple, you'd be like, well, they make computers. Well, how did you know that? Well, because Apple's a thing now. You'd be like, oh, yeah. And that, but even like none of those companies tell you anything about what they make. Now, I would argue, and I've heard Justin make this argument too, like the name, people will go to like, people will accept the name eventually. Amazon is a great word. It's a good word. You remember Amazon. Everybody already has Amazon in their vocabulary. And then by association, we then shift from in the early Amazon. You look at the Amazon logo, had the river and all this. It had nothing to do with, but there was a reason like, oh, the largest river, we're going to be the largest, you know, source of books, whatever. And then you just got used to, well, Amazon's easy to say. Words that are easy to say, Google's a funny word. And if if you're like us and you knew what a Google was from math, you're like, oh, that's hilarious. Look at these nerds did. And it's cool because I'm a nerd and I know what they meant. Google was funny, like that age of the internet where like Yahoo and Google.
But it's also smart because they misspelled it, right? They spelled it different G-O-L. Than the actual word Google, which I think was key because then it became
the word you could trademark.
Exactly. Or and specifically the only thing you would find if you searched for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they could make that happen anyways because they were Google. Well,
that's true. They eventually became a verb.
Yeah. So there is, I don't think any name is fine. I think you need to think about names that are, it's like in comedy, certain words are funnier. You want a name that you go, if you find, when I work on a project and I suggest names to people and we keep mispronouncing it, remember what Amazon's first name was?
No.
Grasshopper. Amazon, Jeff Bezos had a different name for the company. And he realized it was a horrible name and an argument that some names are worse than others.
Booksamillion.com.
What's that?
Booksamillion.com.
No, he thought, hey, you know, I want it to be, because he was focused on the idea of customer service, the idea of everything, and so how cool it'd be to get, you know, get whatever you want. It's like magic. So he thought, what about Kadabra?
A little bit close to cadaver, right?
And everybody, his lawyer, everybody kept going, cadaver? No, Kadabra. And he's like, you listen to him talk about that. And it's funny because you're like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe that name is worse.
Although, Amazon. I do think Abra would have been just fine. Abra.
Like the Swedish pop band?
No. Well,
like the Pokemon?
Is there a Pokemon named Abra?
There's a Pokemon named Abra and a Pokemon named Kadabra.
Well, of the two, I think Abra would be better than Kadabra. I could see a future with Abra. Another good example of this is, do you remember the Tom Hanks directed movie, That Thing You Do? The band had a very clever name. It was pronounced The Wonders, but it was spelled O-N-E, like they're the Wonders. About the fifth time that they got introduced as the O-Neaters, they finally get told by an adult that they're now just the Wonders, W-O-N-D-E-R-S.
And that's a big part of it, is how easy is it memeability transmission of what you're doing. Amazon is a lot easier to say, oh, do you hear from Amazon? It's a company. Now you know that's a company. You never forget that. Kadabra, like, what? Kadabra, this, whatever. Google, once you see the word, you hear the word. Oh, that's it's a company with a silly name. And then it becomes the thing you know. So
it should also be, take it from a guy named Brian Brushwood, have it be a thing that you never have to spell. Like, whatever it is. Even if it's a made-up word, like cracks with the K and an X,
don't have
jarb,
like,
with J-A-R-B. Make it as short as possible, and as easy to, even if you do have to sell it. Like, it took me 5 years before I started saying there is no C in Schwood. Like mm-hmm. that is enough that people tend to get it right. Yeah. So it's like, well, how else can you spell it? Well, it's going to be S-H-W-O-O-D. The only question is whether or not you put a C in there.
Yeah.
Think about that. I've gone through that too, where I've had like told, oh, this thing, but it looks great when you see it. Like, I've had, and that was thing, you know, working like Audiomatic was like, I had a really cool thing. If you saw it, you go, oh, that's cool. But I'm like, well, if most people are telling you go to this.com, like, and you have to tell people how it's spelled or how you failed.
There was very recently, and this will elicit eye rolls from Bryce, deservedly so, a case where we had been bandying about names for an upcoming project that will be a heavy focus of this next year, and I realized that I had not nabbed the .com.
That's right.
And then
you got it right.
I did. And for the first time, it's the first time I paid premium prices. I paid $300 for the domain, which, when we reveal it, I hope most of the listeners will think worth it. And it's great because I can't think of a way to misspell it.
It's not very long. It's not long, which could be a problem.
It's three syllables, ends in a .com.
Sure.
When you say it, you hear it. You can't mess it up. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, I would say, consider, if it's affordable and if it's the right name, then, you know, consider paying premium prices. But then again, like, I don't know, that's something I would not have done in my early days. I would rather have just come up with a different name than pay $300 for a domain.
Yeah. And, you know,
now you tell me. I just paid a couple grand.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get tougher to find good short .coms. You know,
yeah.
And I don't, you know, there are things like .co. I had a .co for a while, or I guess I still have it. But .co feels weird, especially if it's not like .co.uk or .co.nz, like a national code,
right?
I don't know, man. Like, it's not the most important thing, but it is. Whatever the name of your project is, it should be a good name in all the ways that we've just talked
about. I would say. If you're at the point where you're thinking of a lesser domain than .com, mm-hmm. or adding dashes or underscores or whatever, then reconsider the name. Names will feel precious to you and not to anyone else. As
sure.
There are a billion great names out there. And then and then beyond great names, there are plenty of nonsense combination of syllables that have yet to have any meaning ascribed to them. And you could be first in that territory.
And you can, if you make it, worry more about, is it easy to spell and is it memorable? Don't worry too much about people associating it with your product. You know, that I would say that's like I said, Uber, Google, Tesla. These are things that, if you know, Tesla was the name of a dude. You know, Uber means like Uber good. Uber could be anything. Uber could have been the next Amazon. Uber could have been Google, and they used Uber for that. You know, Elon Musk owns X.com.
That's right. There's nothing on there, right? Or is there anything? Because I remember, there's an X.
It's just the letter X. Nice.
Good use of a very expensive property.
Yeah, and it literally, if you look at the inspect the source code, it's just an X.
That's amazing.
But yeah, don't get hung up on, I've got to make it so clever so people know what it is, whatever. It's just a thing that once you know what it is, you can find it and go to it again. And you can come up with names like eBay. You know, eBay has nothing to do with it. It is E in it. The only thing to tell you from the time it is PayPal. Pal. We're going to add pal to the word. You know, we want a payment. We can't find a good payments company, but we'll add pal.
We'll be okay. Your PayPal.
Done. Yeah. PayPal's easy to say. It's silly, but easy to remember.
Yeah, but a good name also can convey an awful lot. You know, like PayPal inventing a book swapping service called Book Buddy or whatever, or Car Friend, or you could staple two words together, or you could go through the dustbin spend some time at archive.org. Looking through all the Prelinger archives and all the copyright free everythings, because of his untimely death in 1921, Houdini, that 70 years after death, copyright has expired on all that stuff. And that's part of the reason we're able
1921?
What's
1926.
That? 1926. Or 26. Okay, that's what it
is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so, way before. There are a lot of things that make that stuff public domain.
Right. So even his name, you could throw Houdini's name on stuff. Hmm. There's no shortage of people throwing Einstein's face and name on stuff, or, right. You know, and Tesla, it was another good pick because it was of that same time. So, look through the dustbin of history for something that is embodies the character of what you're up to, and consider a derivative of that stuff.
Also to Lyle or Yael's email, do you need a website? You should have a website. Like, it doesn't need to be, like, if you're making mousetraps, you don't need to have a super active website, but you should have a website that says we sell mousetraps. You know, I have a personal website that I'm never going to update until something changes. But I have a website that I can send people to so that they know about me, and I don't need to maintain it. But meanwhile, I still have that place on the internet where if people Googled for Bryce Castillo, they would probably see something like that.
I recommend a bare minimum a website that just shows how to reach you if you want to be reached. The other thing is, I say this and people, it's one of these things, it's like when you talk to high school kids about, hey, you should invest 10% of everything you make. Everything you make, put 10% away. And it's like, I'll start later. You tell us to a 25-year-old, I'm still paying off student loans, I'll do this later. You tell us to a 35-year-old, like, man, I wish I did this earlier in my life. And I'm going to tell you the online equivalent of that, a mailing list. A mailing list. Because, at some point in your life, you're going to be attached or involved with something, and you're going to go, man, I want a really easy way to get hold of a bunch of people who are interested in my stuff or what I'm doing or whatever. And it might be, you know, your wife writes a book and you want to tell everybody your wife wrote a book, because there's a lot of people you know who would love to have known this happened. It could be anything and everything. So start a mailing list, and you could do it for free. You can go to like MailChimp and other services, let you start a mailing list for free up until you get to like 500 or 1,000 people, whatever. Right. That's the point where it's really useful. A mailing list is how many times, okay, Brian, Bryce, hey, hi. I'm on Twitter. Hey guys, I just launched a Kickstarter. Can you guys retweet me?
Sure. RT, no response, no engagement, because I'm taking your name and putting it in front of people who may or may not know your name.
Yeah, and I need some help launching this.
I already retweeted it. What else do you want me to do?
Hey, because you got all this, you know, and I get this from people too. It's like I've had one. Hey, I want to write a book. Should I start building a social media following first? And it's like, I'm like, I want to invest in space research. Should I make $1 billion first? and it's like, I'm like, well, yeah, you should. If you have time to work on the social media stuff, do that. But it's not like, oh, I'm going to spend 6 months on this thing and now I got 100,000 followers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work like that. And people like, I want to write a book. Like, okay, what's your email list? I don't have one. When did you start the book? 3 years ago. Did you ask me at the time what to do? Yes. What did I say? start an email list, you know?
Well, and also an email list is something you have to work on, and you have to promote it just like you promote your own social media stuff. It's not just make it and they will come. You have to.
A bank account is something you have to put money into.
Yeah, right.
But
exactly.
If you never start the bank account, don't matter.
Right.
I agree, Bryce. You got it. But at the end of your email, on your website or this, you know, I went to an event last week. I don't need to mention that it was, you know, the Reason Gala, whatever. But, you know, talked to dozens and dozens of people. And people there are interested in my books and stuff. And if I was I was not promoting, I didn't promote, but if I wanted to, you know, I probably could have got 10 or 20 people on my email list there if I was inclined to do that at that event. But I wasn't. You know, I go to a party. Probably every party I go to, I could get three or four people that have like, oh, yeah, let me know. Like, oh, I could, you know, like, oh, here's an easy way to sign up. Just do this if you want to follow. If I did that and was, I mean, I'm, you know, I have enough people asked to be on as is, but if I was a regular Joe with no social media, whatever, but was interested and did this over the course of a couple years, by the time I get to where I have a book out, I'll have more than enough people to promote or do whatever, if I'm doing a Kickstarter or this. So,
yeah, I mean, like the guy who invented Vine and just announced his new thing, his Vine 2.0, like he
Bite.
He was like, oh, here are all the social media accounts that we have for it, and also our website, which is just a mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing is not out yet. People kind of have an idea of what it is, but also they're getting people to sign up to their email list because it's important, just as much as it is to have your own Twitter or Instagram or YouTube or whatever. It is also another weapon and tool at your disposal.
Before Scam School came along, the only way I had to try to capture the attention of people who were seeing the live show was every single stage show, I would promise a book giveaway, and we would pass around an email sign-up list, and then I would go back to the hotel room and enter by hand the 30 to 300 emails, including the fake ones, like your mom underscore sucks at gmail.org. And then
someone might have it.
You never know. But, after nearly 10 years, you know, that 35,000 names is 35,000 names. And there's some segment of people who never would have known about Scam School or any of the other online stuff we do, but they happen to see me at a show back at that day and they were hoping to win a free book.
I mean, hell, I mentioned I had a pop tire last week and I went out to a tire place. And when I was getting it done, they were like, they asked me for my email and they ended up getting it, which I did not really want to give them, but it, there's a reason that they want to take your email and your phone number. There's a reason that the grocery store wants you to use a card, you know. That's what all of that stuff is for marketing.
There are people that I wish they did more, 'cause I want to know what they're up to, and I'm not going to get, you know, overwhelmed by their marketing stuff. There are people I follow and I like who I'd wish I could get, you know, find out more about, do it. By all means, do that. And it's a great, like, man, like, we live in a world where more and more people go, I want to go do a Kickstarter or whatever, to like, well, what's your email list size? I don't have one. So in what version of the future, how far off do you think, how many months away are you from being able to launch a successful Kickstarter if you have zero people right now? Mm-hmm. You know, is it, you know, and it's that weird, like, and a miracle occurs because everybody falls in love with the thing I'm trying to do, ignoring the fact that there are hundreds of thousands of other people doing things they hope people fall in love with. You know, I'm just going to rant. Okay. Here. Can I rant?
Go off.
I get asked frequently, and you guys probably way more than me, hey, I've launched a Kickstarter. Can you help this? It's funny, like, I don't, like, ever really, like, retweet them because then everybody wants and expects me to do it. I do contribute, actually, anonymously to stuff because, like, I have fans and people go, like, oh, here's my Kickstarter or whatever. I'll go take a look. And if it looks cool, I'll, like, oh, cool. I'll support this. I'll do this. And then if you start doing something that's kind of cool, sometimes I will retweet when they've gone out of their way and done a really good job of making the case on Kickstarter for their thing. Mm. All too often, I get this half-assed, they put up one image, I need money for this, and I want, you know, my next year's salary to do this project. And I'm like, wait, you want $20,000 to write a book, you've never written a book before, and do you think this is how I did it? You know, and it's a little, I would say insulting, but it's sort of, but point is how much effort you put in there. If you've put in zero effort into your promotion of your Kickstarter, I have zero faith that you'll be able to execute it.
Mm-mm.
So yeah, think about that.
And that's sort of like online begging happens everywhere and constantly, right? It happens on Twitch, right? Like you're streaming and someone pops into your chat room and says, I'm also live. I'm going to keep my tab open for you. I saw that the other day. I was like, this is okay. This is a very like obvious spam ploy.
And begging is, the difference is begging is I'm asking for something, but I'm not really going to give you anything in return. Right. You know, that's what begging is other than the warm feeling of helping somebody else, you know, offering a cool thing like, hey, yeah, I've got a Kickstarter. I've got a really cool project. I busted my ass for several weeks making this great video and doing all of this with no guarantee of reward. If I know you'll go that far without being sure if you're going to get any payback from it, I'm like, oh, well, this person's probably going to deliver and do a really good job. If it's this half-assed, like, yeah, if I make the money, I'll do it. Sad. Yeah. I'm looking at just the Kickstarters I've contributed to recently. This was actually came from the Planetary Society. So
you've got a shirt that says, remember, chicks they do, stay unextinct.
Yeah, so that was the big comet that, you know, asteroid that wiped out, you know, the dinosaurs. So the Planetary Society does cool stuff. Like they do a lot of these smaller projects, like solar sail projects, planetary defense awareness, things like this stuff. And so I frequently, because usually what happens is they're priced pretty well, usually has a pretty cool T-shirt. I'm like, yeah, I'll do this one. Yeah, I'll do this one. Maker phone. Do you see this one?
No.
No, that sounds familiar, actually. Is that the modular phone?
Not that, which I think is a horrible, horrible idea. Maker phone is, got to go look up Maker phone. And so these guys did a project before, which was like the little mini arcade thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Maker phone is
like a phone. This is a kit. This is like a DIY phone kit.
Yep, do-it-yourself phone kit.
That's clever.
And so it's a very basic telephone that is a cell phone. And so you get the kit, and it's a, you know, put it together sort of thing. And these are people who are into the Maker. Like they built this, the little Maker, little arc. We're looking at the little game board thing they made.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, some young people from like Croatia who come up with this really cool, like, hey, learn how a phone works, learn the fundamentals of this. It's really, you know, effectively priced. And I'm like, I have no expectation of myself. I think I bought the assembled one because I'm not going to sit down and make it. But I'm like, they put effort into it. They have a really good cause.
Yeah, that's clever, man. And they have a fully, like, sort of, they have a page with a lot of information here and clearly a lot of work. So
yep,
this is something that is more than just a proof of concept, probably. And yeah, that's really clever, and it's a good like way to do this Kickstarter.
I've backed stuff on Kickstarter that I fully like. I'm like, this thing's not going to work the way they think it works, but it's like, you know, because some 22-year-old kids out of college or engineers or designers, but their heart's in it, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to support this because I want to give this team may go on to do other stuff, and so I'll back this because I just want to see them, you know.
Well, and partly because you know that backing it means you will definitely hear from them on the next project that they have because you're on their email list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, imagine, oh my God, you know, it'd be funny. I'd love to do a parody Kickstarter for like Steve Jobs and Wozniak, but like from the early 1970s for selling their blue boxes.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Clever. You know, like those were, for those who know, those were the first product that the brain trust behind Apple made. And now maker of iPhone was a device for hacking the telephone system and making free calls. It was a very illegal device.
Very cool.
That would be great. Hire actors that look like them. We want to make this thing to liberate the phone and da da da.
We believe all phone calls should be free.
Yeah. So very cool. Groovy. Anything else, gentlemen?
No,
I think that's it.
I think that's it.
Thank you for the email. Right.
Yeah, thank you. By all means, you know, if you want a cranky response, it's email me. If you want a nice response, ask Bryce. If you want an informed response, ask what's his face? That's Brian.
The other one.
Picks?
I have a pick. Over the weekend, I was playing some video games. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Shocker.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. And
that's me, video games.
I got really into this is like a sequel of sorts, but there's a programming game out that I really like called Human Resource Factory or Human Resource Machine, and it's like a coding game, and so you're learning really basic coding stuff. This is from Tomorrow Corporation. They made World of Goo, and
I didn't know. Of course, and now I see it in the art style. Of course,
yeah. Well, and so they've got a follow up called 7 Billion Humans.
Human Resources. That's what it was.
Human Resource Machine. Yeah. And so this follow up 7 Billion Humans is also a coding game, but it is you have multiple people that you're controlling with this code, and so. They've also expanded sort of the coding language that you use from like very in-depth if then else stuff and counting and directional stuff. It's really good. And I think if you are interested in coding, or I think if you are like a child, this is really good. Especially Human Resource Machine is a really nice intro to coding and how coding works. I mean, you play it. And you don't necessarily know how to build a calculator afterwards, but you realize how difficult it is to do like math calculations, to use code to divide numbers or to sort a list of things when you write out the code to do it is incredible, because it's way more difficult than just the button in Microsoft Word, you know? Mm-hmm.
Like division, you keep adding. I mean, it's like, how you have to build up the bigger functions through smaller ones is...
Yeah.
I'm familiar that I haven't played, but I love things like that help you understand the basics of like logic and what you do. And I advise anybody, if you're interested in coding, just play around, learn something simple or whatever. And it's a different way of seeing things.
And these are cheap games too. Like 7 Billion Humans came out a few months ago. It's $15. It's on the PC, it's on the Switch now, and so it's really good for the touchscreen. It's probably on iOS. It works really well with the touchscreen, by the way. So that's my pick.
Brian?
My goodness. Has anybody seen this last week's episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
No.
I saw someone had clipped out the moment that or part of the episode, and I only watched a few seconds of it because I realized... it was a big thing, and I don't want to just see that. I'd like to get the whole lead into it, but I hear it's very good.
It's a remarkable episode, and I don't think you need to watch all the episodes. You know, it's one of those, like, all you need to know is...
It's not a serialized
spoiler
show.
Alert. Characters change over time. All you need to know is Mac has come to understand that he's gay, and he's processing what that means. The episode is ostensibly about the rest of the gang trying to cash in at the Pride Parade, but instead it becomes a wonderful, surprisingly poignant, introspective journey for Mac. It's a wonderful, wonderful episode. The most recent one called Mac Finds His Pride.
Yeah, this is episode 10 from season 13.
So, you know what's funny is I've just started the series. So I'm like, I'm up to like the first season with Danny DeVito there. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, have you seen this new episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia? I was like, let me guess. Are we going to find out that Mac's gay?
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly allusions to it.
Yeah, they ran a very long setup for that.
Yeah. But I don't want to be an a-hole and be like, oh, is this going to be...
Oh, no. Like, as a matter of fact, I think it was a season or two ago. Like at some point, they were hammering it home so hard that the running joke was Mac was the only one who didn't get it. And then last season they made that, apparent. And then now this whole season has been, they engage in reprehensible behavior at all times. And this season really seems to be a piece by piece meditation on just brilliantly written on, what the people, I don't know. Staying in voice and in character, they managed to say some very, very smart things. And big fan of this season.
cool. I'm it's funny because, like I said, I'm just started the season of Danny DeVito as a regular. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this new guy.
Yeah.
My pick, and it's the same caveat that I gave with the last book that I read by him. And that is, this is Tim Wu's The Master Switch. Now, Tim Wu wrote The Attention Merchants, which Tim Wu, I think, is Professor Wu. His scholarship is amazing. His research is fantastic. And I love reading his books because of that, because he so deeply, deeply gets into stuff. The Master Switch is a book from 2010 about the rise and fall of information empires. And he spends a considerable amount of time talking about, like, the Edison Trust, but, like, AT&T in particular. A lot of it's about AT&T and sort of the advantages and the disadvantages that happened when AT&T became the monopoly and a government-backed monopoly. We've always got to underscore that AT&T was able to work with the federal government to prevent competition. It's right now, I can go to Bing, I can go to DuckDuckGo, I can use other search engines, but I still have trouble going to Bing, binging it. And DuckDuckGo to me is a ridiculous name, and I'm sorry. I'm that superficial that I can't use that. I can't find myself to type that in. But anyhow, we have options. AT&T, not only did you could not use another company for long distance, you couldn't plug another telephone in. It was against the law, and they used the government against that. And so he goes into a long, very, very good history of this in The Master Switch, and it basically the premise is who controls communications. And in 2010, he's very concerned because of, like, mergers, corporate mergers, and not to say they're not worth concerned about this, but, you know, you go read The Attention Merchants, which now gets, you know, years later, which is like, hey, that one thing we're afraid of, there was this other thing, which may be even worse, which is social media and the ability to control and manipulate and all that. And that's also, you know, I don't agree with his conclusions. I'll just put it that way. I don't agree with his conclusions. I think his conclusions could create the same problems. But I think as a book, I think it's worth reading. And people here may be like, no, I totally agree with him. Totally agree. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I recommend the book, though, because it's so well researched. And he makes, you know, as Brian points out, he's so good at presenting the evidence that you're able to come up to a completely different conclusion than he does.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's how I knew it was a good book was mm-hmm. because I finished it and was surprised to find out that his personal opinion, his prescription, there's diagnosis and prescription. He does such a good job of describing the diagnosis that I was surprised to hear that the two of us have very different prescriptions.
Yeah, and there's John McCain's a guy that I respect as a senator. And John McCain identified problems within the system. And John McCain proposed legislation like McCain-Feingold, that then created an even bigger problem because unforeseen, and it wasn't the intent. And I mean, I don't want to get political, but it wasn't because the intent was wrong. We all agree that, you know, we should have openness, transparency, all this. But what happened was not what we thought would happen. Many people thought would happen, and it made it maybe more complicated or worse problem. And that wasn't the goal. And that's the thing. Some of the Wu says, oh, we should do this. I'm like, I think that'll make a bigger problem because it'll cause this. I could be wrong. And I think that you could be very well intentioned.
But it's a great book. I highly recommend this. Yeah. It's really, really good.
Yep. Agreed. Totally agreed. So he's got a new book coming out too, I think.
Oh, right on.
So I'm looking forward to that. So again, I love reading people. I go like, man, I hear your point. I understand what you're saying. You did a great job of making the case. I feel differently, but I still like what you did. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.